going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Happy to have you with us tonight. Hope you had a happy weekend, a good weekend. Hope you aren't too waterlogged, soaked, etc. But we needed the rain. So if you are, tough. Welcome to your local liberal resistance headquarters. Thrilled to have you with us. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach me at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com. And on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show and on X at John R. Whitmer. Love to hear from you. Studio lines are open, so please feel free to reach out. The John Whitmer Show is expanding. I'll share this with you, a little bit of good news. Starting Saturday, this coming Saturday, May 3rd, we will be rebroadcasting The John Whitmer Show, sort of a best ofs and highlights. It'll begin airing live right here on KNSS Radio. The regular Sunday evening shows will be rebroadcast every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. So if you don't catch us or you want to hear highlights of previous episodes, if you're looking for a particular something, you know, reach out. Let us know, hey, I never caught blank, or I'd love to hear that interview you did with Newt Gingrich or, you know, Mike Pence or some of the conversations I've had with folks over the years. Reach out, let us know. But that starts May 3rd, this coming Saturday, from 1 to 3. We'll be airing Saturdays from 1 to 3, The John Whitmer Show, rebroadcast. And, of course, we'll be here for you every Sunday. So good news for us. Tonight, we've got a great lineup for you. 4th District Congressman Ron Estes will be with us here live in studio to discuss his recent trip to El Salvador. No, he was not there to visit Albrego Garcia. But we'll talk with him about Congress's efforts to renew the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and I'll ask him to grade the president's first 100 days. So it should be a good conversation. Always thrilled to have the congressman with us when he's in town. Former chief of staff for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, Mandy Gunasekera will be with us. We've had her on the show before. She's a brilliant woman, and she'll explain why many are wondering if the Biden EPA was a regulatory agency or a money laundering operation for the DNC. Author Donald Wilkie will tell us about his analysis of this week's Supreme Court arguments on parental rights and the constitutional right to freedom of religion. And Wichita City Councilman J.V. Johnston will try to explain why some of his colleagues are considering raising taxes, specifically property taxes, to address the budget shortfall. I mean, we know they've got a budget shortfall, but look, folks, it's not a revenue problem. It's a spending problem. And we all know it. It's high time they started to address it. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls all throughout the show at 316-869-1330. Tonight, I wanted to talk during this first segment about a something we did. We dealt with it in the city of Wichita. And now those of us who live on the west side of town or out in the rural parts west of West Wichita and Goddard are going to be dealing with coming up on May 13th. The USD 265 Goddard School District is preparing for a bond initiative. And they sent out this lovely, glossy, 12-page brochure. Funded, no doubt, with, it doesn't say otherwise. So, yep, there you go. So it's funded by taxpayer dollars. So taxpayer dollars sent out. This is a full-color 12-page front, back, glossy. I mean, impressive, isn't it, Phil? Yeah, it's very impressive. Paid for by taxpayer dollars, a piece of, propaganda. And it starts with Goddard Public Schools bond information book about the foundation of excellence. And then it goes into marketing, basically, why you should vote for this bond initiative. And you don't get to any of the details until the last two pages, of course, because that's, that's called bait and switch. But it starts off with a foundation of excellence and four key impacts and why you have to do this, why you got to vote yes, because it's a foundation of excellence. And so I thought, well, let's look at Goddard. Let's see how excellent is the Goddard School District. So I went to kansasopengov.org. If you ever want to look up your school and how your school's doing, just go to kansasopengov.org. And look, it's all from the Kansas Department of Education. So I looked. So let's see here. The percentage of students on track to be college and career ready for USD 265. This is the Goddard School District. 10th graders. Let's see. Math, 8% of low-income kids and 25% of the rest are college and career ready. In math. In reading, it's better. 13% of low-income 10th graders and 34% of the rest are college and career ready. And Goddard considers that a foundation of excellence. And by the way, all those stats are below the state average. But hey, they still need millions of dollars to, I guess, build their foundation of excellence. So, maybe they need that in order to staff properly. But then again, I looked again. KansasOpenGov.org. In the last 10 years, Goddard has had a 72% increase in managers. That's admin, supervisors, superintendents. 72% increase in managers and a 249.3% increase in non-teachers. They're doing a lot of hiring. They're just not putting those people to work in the classroom. But in the same 10-year period, the average number of students per teacher... Oh, well, this must be because those managers are in the classroom. Well, no, apparently not. In the same 10-year period, the average number of students per teacher has gone from 19.9 in the classroom. So one teacher for 19.9 students in 2005 to 18 last year. So it's actually gone down. It's gotten better. So why do they need to hire 72% more managers and 250% not more non-teachers? Sounds to me like they're bloated with administrative personnel. But maybe they need the money. Maybe they're building that foundation of excellence and asking for multiple millions of dollars in taxes because they're broke. Maybe they just need the money. Oh, well, no. Again, KansasOpenGov.org. They have $25,765,451 in carryover cash on hand. They got almost $26 million in the bank. So why do they need more? Wow, that's interesting. Well, man, I know. They must have lost funding. I thought that must be it. Their per-pupil funding must have decreased. Because, the legislature, though that Sam Brownback and the Kansas legislature, they've been cutting funding, right? So I figure that must be it. They must have lost funding over the last 10 years. So I look, that's not right either. They get $18,966 per pupil. And that has increased by $6,700 per pupil in the last 10 years. So Wow, that's interesting. So, and by the way, over that period of time, 40% of students are proficient in reading, 36% are proficient in math, and 38% are proficient in science. So they've received almost $7,000 more per pupil, and they still can't get 50% of their students proficient. But they need more money. They need more tax dollars. And they sent out a 12-page brochure here full of lies. And then we go in here on the next page, and they talk about investing in student success. So I figure, well, maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're going to put this into classrooms and, you know, AI stuff and tech. So I thought, well, that must be what they're doing. Is they're going to build classrooms, and they're going to build tech, and they're going to hire, you know, maybe paras and computers and things. Well, no, that's not it either. Let's see. They've got convert existing stadium into varsity level stadium, add enlarged home and visitor bleachers, upgrade a press box, add concessions, resurface a track, add turf, add LED to athletic fields, add weight training classrooms for health and fitness. Modernize existing stadium, update a press box, renovate existing stadium, renovate a field house, resurface a track, add turf, to add new drivers, add new baseball, add new baseball, add new basketball, add new press box, resurface a track. Gee, wait a minute. I wasn't aware that all of that was going to help improve student outcome. And then it comes down to the truth of that funding I talked about and how much this is going to cost. Because they said in the beginning it was going to be cheap. This isn't going to cost us much. They advertise this as $9.82 per month on a $100,000 home. Well, that's not much. That's only $10. That's less than $10. That's cheap. Less than $10, right? For Goddard, that's, you know, a bunch of rich folks out there. But then again, if you think about it, the average residential home in Goddard, Kansas, average home value is $300,140. So in reality, when they say $9.82 per month per $100,000 home, that's not actually accurate. It's more like $35 a month. It's actually $353.52 per year in new taxes. $350 a year to buy a bunch of new sports fields, press boxes, weight rooms, and track equipment. And then it talks why we should do this. Because, quote, every child gets what they need. What they need is an education, folks, not a new track or seating or a press box. What they need to be is college and career ready when they graduate. On May 13th, voters in the USD 265 Goddard School District will be asked to vote on yet another massive multi-million-dollar school bond initiative. And according to this expensive taxpayer-funded glossy mailer, the bond's only $9, but the reality is it's $353. And what will voters get for it? LED lights and activity fields, bleachers, weight rooms, upgraded press boxes, and modern stadiums. But as for the most recent survey, only 34% of Goddard students are proficient in reading. Sounds to me like every Goddard student isn't getting what they need. We'll take a quick break, and then author Donald Wilkie will tell us about this week's Supreme Court arguments on parental rights. Speaking of parental rights, they deserve an education. And the constitutional right of freedom of religion. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. I want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. They've got some great stuff coming up, some great events coming up. Speaking of which, we're actually going to be broadcasting. We've got one more remote coming up. This is going to be rather fun. We're going to broadcast live from from AFP's office coming up on May 18th. And we'll be at their headquarters downtown. We'll have more information. You can go to the John Whitmer Show Facebook page. But their office is at Union Station coming up on May 18th. So look out on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page for more information. We'll be broadcasting live from our friends at Eck Insurance coming up on May 18th.
I think this will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be. I know they're going to do some food, have some other fun, but it'll be a live broadcast, much like the fire pit the other night. Last month, so next,
which by the way was a success, I think.
Yeah,
that was a really good blast.
Yeah, this one will be fun too. So, okay. But at any rate, that's coming up here May 18th. Keep your mark that on your calendar. So the Supreme Court heard arguments. I can't figure a segue to that, so we're just going to do hard segue. The Supreme Court heard arguments this week in a case regarding parental rights and public school curriculum. Specifically, the case was Mahmoud versus Taylor. The case centers on whether parents have the right to opt their children out of instruction that includes LGBTQ themes. Donald Wilkie is author of Freedom Revealed, A Simple, Elegant System. He's an entrepreneur and expert in the relationship between government autonomy and freedom, and he joins us now. Don, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
Pleasure to be with you, John.
So this is that Montgomery County, Maryland case where the Board of Education approved a slate of storybooks with queer characters for K through 5 English classes, correct?
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that gets me about this case, look, if you want to read this to your kids, fine, that's up to you. That's up, you know, if you want to groom your children, I'm fine with that. But the issue here, well, I'm not fine with it, but that's your right as a parent. But the issue here is that the district is putting this in the curriculum and the parents have no right to opt out, correct?
Yeah, my understanding is that's correct. The problem I have, of course, with it is the purpose of education is to prepare a child for the marketplace. And I have no idea what this curriculum that they're talking about in the schools, how it in any way, shape, or form prepares the child for the marketplace.
Well, it doesn't, but that's a separate issue. Yeah, I mean, again, the content, you can, I don't know how you could, but some could make an argument that there's validity in the content, or maybe you're being open and creating diversity, whatever. But again, it shouldn't be mandatory. It's you know, look, if I want to teach gun control to or gun safety to my kids, that's fine. That's my right. But again, a district wouldn't make that mandatory. You'd want to allow people to opt out. By the same argument here, why shouldn't a kid or parents be able to opt their kids out of this?
Well, of course, they should be able to. I mean, it doesn't make any sense that they can't. And my point is it doesn't make any sense that it's there in the first place. It has nothing to do with preparing a child for the marketplace. And if the purpose of education, and we have a real need to prepare our children for the marketplace. The competition worldwide is getting fierce. And as you know, our educational system is becoming one of the worst in the world. We used to be the best. And we are not preparing our children for the marketplace, and especially this age. I mean, this has nothing to do with this age. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the other issue here is age appropriateness. And at kindergarten, I mean, again, if you want to have this conversation for high school kids, again, you could make the argument one way or the other whether you think it's right content-wise.
Or if you want to have it at your home with your child.
Exactly.
I mean, that's your prerogative, right?
Right. Well, and the groups that's suing here are mostly Christian and Muslim parents, and they're arguing that exposing their children to this type of content is basically forcing them to instruction that violates their religious beliefs and directly interferes with their ability to direct the religious upbringing of their children. And I mean, I think it's far more insidious than that, but I think there's some validity to their arguments.
You know, this is maybe a little bit off the subject, but I saw Marco Rubio on Meet the Press today, and they were trying to get him, you know, that we give him, Kristen Welker was giving a bunch of gotcha questions.
I saw this too.
He made a very simple point. He said, you know, if we have illegal mothers who have had anchor babies and we deport the mothers, it is up to the mother to take the child. It's not for us to say the child can't go.
Right.
And this is the point with parenting. You know, parents have this propriety over their children, and they should be able to work with that propriety. They should have the say of what can and cannot be done with their children. I mean, they have the legal right to make decisions. They have the legal right to make decisions for vaccinations. They have the legal right to do all sorts of things with their child that the school really doesn't.
But that's not the mindset that we're dealing with. Keep in mind, this is the Hillary Clinton, it takes a village mindset, and they don't see it that way. They think it's the government should play a bigger role than it should. We're talking with Donald Wilkie, author of Freedom Revealed, A Simple, Elegant System. The books at the center of this case, Don, include A Prince and Knight, featuring a young prince who falls in love with, of course, a knight, who then helps him protect his kingdom from a dragon, and Uncle Bobby's Wedding, about a little girl whose favorite uncle is marrying another man. And again, look, if you want to have this discussion in your home or whatever, but is this appropriate material for kindergartners? And I just, that's where I come down on this, is it's not appropriate, I don't believe. And either way, that should be a parental decision. And it seemed like, based on the questions and the demeanor and some of the responses, that the Supreme Court seems to be likely to rule for parental opt-out. That would be my gut. What's your take on that?
Well, if they don't, they're fools. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking back at my education. Everybody can look back at their own education. And am I going to say, oh, my God, there's a huge gaping hole in my education because when I was a kindergartner, I didn't learn about gay and lesbian relationships?
Yeah, I didn't either, and I don't feel like it cost me anything not learning about that when I was a kindergartner.
Exactly. I mean, this thing's ridiculous, and the more ridiculousness we can stop, the better it is.
Don,
I'm all for that. That is freedom.
If folks want information, if they want a copy of the book, again, the book is called Freedom Revealed, A Simple, Elegant System. They can find them at freedomrevealed.net, correct?
That's correct. Amazon is always a good place to look for the book, and I have a lot of videos up on Substack that I think your audience would enjoy.
Don, I appreciate you. Thank you again for joining us this evening. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Thanks so much, John.
Coming up, former chief of staff at the EPA, Mandy Gunasekera, will explain why so many are wondering if the Biden EPA was a regulatory agency or just a money laundering operation for the Democrat Party. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, you can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And, of course, you can always get us live with the free Odyssey app in order to get started. And, of course, remember, Saturday, starting Saturday the 3rd, this show will be rebroadcast Saturdays from 1 to 3. And while you're at it, make sure you check us out on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show. And you can find me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, Republicans in Congress are launching a probe into a Biden-era green energy grant program that sent billions of taxpayer dollars into climate groups tied to Democrats and former President Joe Biden's allies. GOP leaders on the House Energy and Commerce Committee sent letters to the 8 nonprofits awarded grants from the $20 billion greenhouse gas reduction program, seeking answers to ensure the Biden and EPA followed proper ethics and conflict of interest protocols. I guess we know how that's going to come out. With us now to tell us more about the probe is former chief of staff at the EPA, Mandy Gunasekera. Mandy, thank you for joining us. It's nice to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
So, you know, why am I not surprised that there's a lack of oversight related to how this money was being dispersed? I mean, this is the same administration that, you know, brought us the organized departure from Afghanistan. Come on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we've seen this song and dance before, and it seems to occur quite often during the Obama administration and then the Biden administration.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was the same people running the same offices.
Right.
The biggest difference is during the Biden administration, you had Democrats in Congress award EPA $20 billion. This is double the agency's standard operating budget. It's since grown, but when I was there, their standard operating budget, and they handed this agency $20 billion without doing anything to fix problems that had long plagued the agency's grants programs. You can't see me, I'm air quoting grants programs, because as you aptly put it, a lot of these so-called grants that were set aside purportedly to help create some tangible environmental improvement actually just went to groups that were busy expanding the political power of the left instead of doing anything good for public health or the environment.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing doesn't come as any surprise to me. We've got a perfect example of Joe Biden's government efficiency right outside our building here. We are in a large building. The entire third floor is now occupied by Department of Homeland Security. And out back, and literally this is in the rear of the building. You have to know where to go to get to the rear of this building. I mean, it's an obscure location. But there are two charging stations for electric vehicles back here. And these are two of the six or eight that the entire Biden administration built nationwide. So they're available for public, but the Homeland Security is always parked there, and they're back here in remote locations. But the Biden administration could tell you that there are two of them that are built in Kansas. Nobody could find them. And this is a perfect example, though, of how Joe Biden's administration didn't bother to follow protocols, didn't bother to do any fact-checking on this. A case in point, $2 billion from this GGRF fund went to Stacey Abrams. I mean, talk about corruption, just rank corruption. How did she get money? What has she ever done to qualify her for a climate grant?
Yeah, well, purportedly, she was a part of some group that was busy going from home to home in low-income, vulnerable communities, as they define them, environmental justice communities, and trying to convince people to swap out their gas stoves for electric-powered stoves. That was the whole setup for this organization Stacey Abrams was affiliated with. But, you know, we've seen this. Again, this money wasn't designed to help the environment or address public health issues. It really was designed to go and to grow the power of the political left.
Right.
For example, some of these grant dollars, certainly Stacey Abrams, she's notorious. She is a political activist for the left that has done all sorts of things to improve and expand their reach throughout the South. But some of the EPA funds went to an organization that handed them out to groups in New York that was busy trying to find ways to have illegal aliens sign up to vote in New York. So, you know, and they do all of this under the rubric of environmental justice or climate change. And the reason they do that, because if any normal person asks a question about environmental justice or climate change, instead of answering the actual question, which tends to be legitimate, like how are you using these funds and how are they actually helping advance the mission, they can just say, well, you're being racist or you're being a bigot or you're a climate denier. They come up with all these monikers
right,
to distract from very legitimate questions and very clear avoidances of oversight and its absolute misspending of taxpayer resources.
You know, the other thing that you notice here, I mean, you've got the Stacey Abrams one. There's another $7 billion to Climate United, which was a group that received most of the money, currently staffed by former Biden climate advisor who worked during the last 2 years of the president's term and then turned around. Some of these organizations were literally formed within days of the grant being funded. It's almost like they set up the fund and then they turned around and created organizations to apply for the fund. It's like government insider trading almost.
Yeah, and you see that at EPA, you see that at USAID, you see it at all of these agencies, and it's almost as if the agencies are addressing some hyper emotional issue that increases the likelihood of bad actors. And so it was especially prevalent at USAID and EPA. But it is crazy for me to see, because I've been a political appointee during the first Trump administration. And when you go in, you have to engage in all sorts of disclosures. You have to ensure that you take very careful steps to not engage with any meetings, much less business from a regulatory perspective, engagements with prior clients or prospective clients. There's all these loops you have to go through, and there are these chief ethics councils that are supposed to enforce it. It's interesting to see during the Biden administration, they seem to have forgotten that protocol, or in the event people were actually called out, they just got a little wrist slap here and there. During the Trump administration, it was very much night and day. And it's a double standard in the sense that they will hold Republican appointees to this ethical standard that's designed really to subvert their ability to be effective and experts acting in a policy realm of which they have experience and networks. That's important. Where in the Democrat administrations, they let them engage in this type of corrupt self-dealing, the likes that you just explained, where you had someone in charge of a regulatory program awarding $1 billion of funds to a previous organization that he worked for, and then he ends up at the end of it going to work for it to this day, as far as we know. So it's just the worst kind of self-dealing, and rightfully, I mean, taxpayers should be very upset because this is just creating this cycle of cushy jobs where people use taxpayer funds, but not to go to any tangible societal benefit or push some broader societal improvement that they are purportedly tasked with.
We're talking with former chief of staff at the EPA, Mandy Gunasekera. Mandy, let me ask you, several of these groups now that were recipients of this money have sued the Trump administration over their attempts to rake back the funds. And of course, an Obama appointed judge, Judge Chutkan, the one who was also, I mean, she's a Trump hater, so big shock. She's now issued a temporary restraining order preventing the EPA from freezing the grant funds. How do you think this is all going to play out?
I think ultimately, you know, we have the Supreme Court that is the ultimate check, and a lot of these decisions will ultimately be appealed, and they will work their way out. It's frustrating to see, but it's also good for the public to have a clear picture now of the fact that every single institution that's important to our democracy has been corrupted by people who've lost sight of relative missions. And instead of enforcing things like public health and the environment, they're just trying to boost their own personal wealth or that of their family. It's not really about doing anything good. And so the silver lining, at least for now, is we have a clear picture of this. And that's actually a huge improvement, because remember, it wasn't that long ago when the president would talk about the deep state. And I would characterize this self-dealing, the cycle of self-dealing prevalent in the Democrat administrations, as a part of that whole deep state status quo that really undermines DC's purpose and the business of our constitutional republic. It's good for the American people to see that. I think ultimately, though, these decisions are being appealed. Administrator Zeldin, who is running EPA right now, he's doing a fantastic job. He has a legal background. A lot of the people who work for him are some of the best in the business in terms of understanding the legal ins and outs. I think eventually all of this will go the way of the right, which is the way of the law. And there's nothing in the law that allows a previous administration to award $20 billion to push it outside of the reach of oversight and accountability and ultimately get away with it.
You know, it's sad, and yet the media has been demonizing DOGE and the efforts, and they're just the whining and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And yet you find stories like this, and it seems so clear cut. But if you listen to the media, it's just mean and heartless, and we're just trying to, you know, throw mama, grandma off the cliff and whatnot.
Right. Well, you know, these people who've engaged in this corrupt scheme, they've been throwing or shoveling, I should say, buckets full of taxpayer money off the cliff. And that should be very upsetting to the general public. And so the Department of Government Efficiency, it's fantastic work, because it's about time for the American people to see exactly how their funds are being wasted. This is hard-earned money going into these coffers where no one has a clear picture of where it goes, how it's spent, and what does it ultimately do. And that flies in the face of how the system was actually set up to operate. And so this you know, shining sunlight is an important first step to reestablishing accountability, which has been a priority of President Trump's and certainly a priority of the cabinet officials he's designated to run these various agencies.
Well, Stacey Abrams still thinks she's governor. So if folks want to connect with you, they can find you on X. I know we follow each other on X, but you're at Mississippi MG on X, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
I appreciate you. Thank you again for joining us. It's a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Yeah, always great to be with you.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Give us a call. We'll be back right after this.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, my friends at Americans for Prosperity, great group of folks. They absolutely, if you're looking for a way to get involved, you can make your voice heard today by visiting AmericansForProsperity.org. And coming up next month, we'll be broadcasting live, taking the show on the road downtown to AFP's offices in Union Station. We'll be doing our last of the remotes. Would have been a Topeka remote, but the legislature just too dang fast. They did their jobs too quickly. So my friends at Eck Insurance are sponsoring us on a trip downtown. We're going to be broadcasting live from AFP's offices at Union Station. So that should be pretty cool coming up here third week, I believe. Let me look. You made me think here, thinking fast on my feet, which I'm not good at. May 18th. Yep, third Sunday. So also, I want to remind you, starting Saturday, May 3rd, we'll be rebroadcasting the John Whitmer Show on Saturdays from 1 to 3. So if you didn't catch this show, you'll be able to hear live bits and pieces from this and other shows rebroadcast right here on Saturdays from 1 to 3. And, of course, don't forget to catch my carry-on commentaries every weekday here on KNSS three times a day. Those one-minute commentaries are coming up. Daryl, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thanks for sticking around.
Yes. Boy, it's been a while. I think I talked to you right before the Trump election, and we were feeling pretty good about it then, but I really want to talk about Laura Kelly. And
okay.
I think she's done such a bad job here recently that there's no way that any Democrats ever going to win again in office. We should have won with Schmidt. I still can't believe we didn't win that. I still don't know what was going on there.
Well, they had help. I mean, she would not have won had Republicans stuck together.
Yeah,
I know you said that
there was like 100,000 voted for Moran that voted for Kelly. I do not believe that. I just cannot believe that. I just don't believe that a radical leftist. I'll tell you what it was. I think that it was, what was Bill Graves and Hayden doing out there pulling for her on TV?
You know, were those two paid off or what? No, those two are pretty much. You know, I'm not a big.
Graves and Hayden were out there publicizing her and pumping her, and I thought,
oh yeah,
who the hell's paying them off? Because, I mean, are they going to back another radical
probably
leftist this time?
I think there are Republicans that are. I mean, I think those two are the quintessential example of Republicans in name only. And sadly, I think Nancy Kassebaum is beginning to fall into that group as well. But those two have endorsed every Democrat in the last couple of elections. They did the same thing in a few other races, and I think sadly that's what you're going to see.
I mean, I was too young before Mike Hayden was our governor, but he seemed like a pretty conservative governor. What happened to him? Why was he back? And she's as woke as they get. How can any conservative Kansan governor back her when they knew her record and everything she's done? I just don't understand that.
It's
there
tough.
Has to be some reason for that.
I actually don't think that it's a reason. I just think they're true believers. I think if you look at them, I think, and I appreciate the call, Daryl. I just think they, you know, those two and a number of others. I served with a number of them, and the more they've drifted the left, and I don't think the Republican Party has necessarily moved to the right necessarily. I think we've always been right center right, and I just think that you know, some of these folks were never really Republicans in many cases, and you know, case in point, Jean Schodorf, you know, she was a Republican, and then she just came out and admitted what she was, which was a Democrat all along. So Ed, thanks for sticking around. You're on the John Whitmer Show. Ed, are you there?
Ed, thanks for sticking around.
And you might want to turn down your microphone in there, turn down your speakers in the background.
Got it. on this more of what you're teaching, kindergartners in school and about sex stuff?
Yep.
When I was in grade school in the 40s and the 50s, they used to have educational movies. How to date, how to do, you know, things kids ought to do. And they had one on homosexuals. They said, stay away from them. And that went clear up into the 60s. I just saw this movie on it after a TV show I watched on TV just a couple of years ago, and they showed this film. And somebody pulls up, don't get in the car with them and all that, because they have a mental illness. Well, clear up into the 60s, they knew what that was all wrong. What happened?
You know, it's a good question, Ed. I'm not going to, you know, punt. I'm not going to take a swing at that one, but what I will tell you is it's certainly not a place to, it certainly shouldn't be mandatory. And I think the real tragedy here, and I the reason it came up in the interview is I gave the example of gun safety, because I ran the bill in the Kansas legislature for the Eddie Eagle, which is, you know, basically find a gun, stop, don't touch it, run away, tell an adult. And the Democrats all said, oh, you can't teach that. You can't teach it. It wasn't mandatory. It was just an option. And yet here you have a school district that is requiring this kind of material. It's wholly inappropriate, and it certainly shouldn't be mandatory. So stick around. We'll take a quick break. And then after the top of the hour break, 4th District Congressman Ron Estes will be with us. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Tell your legislators to keep it. You know, guess what? I'm sitting with one. Text AM to 52886. Ron, 52886. And tell Congress to keep AM in radio. Ron, keep AM in radios. Make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show. Look, I just did it. I don't have to text it now. With us now is we're blessed, folks. We're very fortunate. We have 3 out of 4. We have a great federal delegation to Congress in Kansas, and with us now is our 4th District Congressman Ron Estes. Ron, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you, my friend.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate you having me on, and it was a great introduction that you gave. You know, because I am a co-sponsor of the bill to actually keep AM radio in cars. I mean, that's one of the things that, just from an emergency broadcast standpoint, and being able to get so much information across, particularly rural America, it's so important that we actually
think we can get that this year.
There's a lot of things moving on right now, and we'll see how the year unfolds. So right now we've got one big beautiful field that we're focused on.
We'll get to that. Okay, let me start with, I saw, I think it was a KSN or one of the TV, I saw their news feed that you were in El Salvador recently as part of a trade mission, by the way. You weren't there to visit Alberto Garcia. But I'm curious, tell me about that. Tell me about the visit, the trip, and what you all were able to accomplish, or what the purpose was.
Yeah, well, we went down a trip. It was mostly Ways and Means members, and of course we're responsible for all trade issues. So we went down, went to Panama, went to Brazil, went to Costa Rica, and also went to El Salvador when we were there. We toured the Panama Canal. Look how important that was from a trade standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
and just the cost of goods being able to get to and from. And the number one destination is to the east coast of the United States. So obviously, and then number two is from the west coast over to Europe. And so we need to make sure that we keep that open. We keep good control there. Obviously, there's some issues with Brazil on trade, particularly around tariffs. And we can talk some more about tariffs in general. But Brazil puts tariffs on things like ethanol that comes from the United States, but you know, it puts 18%, and whereas it's only 2.5% coming from the United States. And so obviously that impacts our farmers in Kansas and across the country. So the real focus was on trade. But while we were down there, we actually went to El Salvador. We were able to get into CECOT. And actually,
that's the prison, correct?
That's the prison there. And you know, the backstory, this isn't something the media really talks about, but the president down there 4 years ago said he's going to do something about crime. He made it his goal. He pledged that he was going to do that, and he did. What he did was he went out and he built a prison. He built his they're able to hold up to 40,000 people, and they built it in less than 8 months. And it is, we were able to get inside with, they had, I think they have like 15,000 people that have committed crimes in El Salvador that are already locked up. And what's happened is because the president said, we're going to lock people up, we're going to prosecute them, and we're going to convict them, or we're going to detain them. The crime rate's gone down in El Salvador. It worked. He did what he needed to do. The country's a lot safer now because of that. And because of that as well, they had open space now. So, you know, when we talk about some of the deportees for some of these other countries that have come across illegally over the last 4 years or longer, that's kind of a way station while the country, you know, whether it's in South Central America or whether it's in Africa or Eastern Europe, they're being held there while they're waiting to be processed by the country to be received. And so, you know, it's a prison. It's not a place I'd want to go spend time in, but
the conditions aren't as horrible as what, I mean, the media is making this place out to be like, you know, some Nazi death camp.
Make it sound like a gulag or that.
Exactly. Yes,
it's a concrete building. Yes, it's, you don't have cable TV. You don't have air conditioning. You don't have all the, amenities
parlors,
that you might have.
It's not the Marriott.
But while we were there, they had doctors and nurse set up. They had an infirmary inside the building that they can utilize. They had folks out doing exercises and stretching, and they brought out some of the prisoners and talked about some of their crimes that they were convicted of, and having the gang tattoos and everything just to highlight who they were and what their crimes were and how that impacted people in El Salvador.
Tell me what your thoughts are. I mean, it seems obviously they're on the opposite side of the aisle from you, so you're going to have some ideological differences with some of your colleagues. But it cannot be smart for some of these folks, your colleagues. You've had one senator and, what, four of your congressional colleagues fly down to El Salvador, one of whom pledged she wouldn't come back until she came back with him. And, of course, then she came back this week because he's still there. But I find it amazing that they're making so many things about Albrego Garcia. He's not a Maryland man. He's not a mild-mannered father. He's an illegal immigrant with a history of violence and gang activity. And yet they're trying to make this guy like he's, you know, Santa Claus.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can count that up as another broken promise, you know, to commit to stay there.
I'm not coming back until she went home.
You know, the thing about it is it's really the Democrats over the last, particularly the last 4 years, they either turned a blind eye or they were complicit in supporting what President Biden was doing to allow all these illegal people to come into our border and to come into our country. And instead, you know, President Trump says we're going to enforce the law, which is the exact same law that he had in his first term, Biden had during his term, and Trump's enforcing again now. You know, the folks, particularly, you know, a U.S. senator, U.S. Congress members, they ought to be focusing on how do they support American citizens. That's the role. They shouldn't be worried about El Salvador citizens as much as they should be worried about American citizens. And it's really sad to see where they put their priorities. But it's just a continuation of some of the waste, fraud, and abuse and other things that they're trying to support and encourage and continue.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at Von Holland, the Senator Von Holland, you know, he didn't even bother to pay lip service when his own constituent died, didn't even reach out to her mother. And yet he's doing all of this for Albrego Garcia, who's not a constituent. He's an illegal. they talk about bring the Maryland man home. I'm sorry, he is home.
Yep. He's an El Salvador citizen, and he's back where his home country. And you know, a U.S. senator like Van Hollen ought to be supporting U.S. citizens instead of supporting El Salvador citizens.
We're talking with 4th District Congressman Ron Estes. Ron, you return to D.C. tomorrow. Like you mentioned earlier, number one priority is the budget. Probably Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is got to be a key part of that.
Yes. I mean, that's the biggest thing on our plate right now. We completed the first step of the budget reconciliation process. Basically, we got a budget resolution passed, same version, same wording passed both the House and the Senate. It took the Senate amended the House's original version, and so the House had to pass it a second time in order to move forward. But we want to do, and you know, the president came up with the name of One Big Beautiful Bill, but it's so important to do that so that we can get it done. And the things that are in that bill, one, we're starting to go after mandatory spending and looking at ways that we can actually cut the deficit through that process. And then the biggest thing out there that's going to affect so many people across America is the extension and renewal of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we passed in 2017. You know, there was so much positive that came out of that when we passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we saw the economy grow. We saw people's salaries go. We saw more bonuses. We saw money being brought back into the United States for multinational companies, and they were using it to invest in the United States. They built new plants, they built research and development facilities, and spent the money here, invested here, and took our economy off. In fact, we actually made more in tax revenue over the last 7 years than what was projected by the
right.
Congressional Budget Office.
Right.
And they said we'd lose $1.5 trillion. We've actually more than made up for that through 2024. So we still have a few more years to make that happen. And we can't go backwards. You know,
no, it'd be a massive tax increase.
That's right. Back in 2017, you think about, you know, the Economist and President Obama were saying, well, we've just got this new normal. You just have to accept slow economic growth.
Right.
We had stagnant wages. Those are the types of things that were hurting Americans, and we can't go back to that.
It's like $3,000 for the average Kansas.
It's about $2,200 would be a tax increase for the average Kansan if we don't extend the tax cuts through that process. And there were so many good things in there that relate to pro-economic growth and pro-family, pro-middle class. I mean, we doubled the child tax credit as part of that. If we don't do the extension, that cuts back in half. We increased the standard deduction so people don't have to collect all the receipts and use it to itemize because the standard deduction is so high now. 91-92% of the people take the standard deduction because it's over $30,000 for a couple.
Right.
On that standard deduction. And so those are the things that make it easier to do your taxes. I mean, nobody likes to fill out the tax return. Nobody wants to pay the IRS.
Oh, but no.
We want to make it as easy and streamlined and make it so that it actually helps Americans instead of harms them.
The big talk right now is, we're at Trump's first 100 days. If you had to give him a letter grade, how would you grade the president's first 100 days?
You know, if you look at what the president, I guess this Wednesday when the first 100 days
right,
passes,
yep.
You know, the president campaigned on some specific things. And he's hit the ground running, working on almost everything that he talked about in the campaign. And yes, a lot of it's being done by executive orders. A lot of it's being done by the directions he's done his cabinet. Legislative process takes a little bit longer to codify some of those things. But you just look at all of that and activity and things that are going on. He's addressed the imbalances on the trade and the tariff activity. Haven't got all that resolved yet. I mean, it's created a little bit of the turmoil as we go through that change process.
Do you feel confident that will work itself out? I mean, countries are starting to come to the table. I know he's worked out deals with Israel and India. There are some countries that are already starting to come to.
Yeah.
Do you think that'll work itself out?
Yeah, it really is. And you know, you look at the imbalances. Even countries that are our friends have been over assigning tariffs to U.S. products. You know, whether it's Canada putting 200 or 300% tariffs on agriculture products or butter or dairy products and other things. You know, we don't sell much American beef to Australia because of the tariff they put on it. But Australian beef comes into the United States. And so even our friends have tariffs on products that they want to support. that first week of April when the tariffs were, structure was announced, before it was said we're going to put a 90-day moratorium on it. I believe in talking to Trade Ambassador Greer, that 70 different countries had reached out just in the first few days of that week afterwards to talk about, you know, we recognize that there's some injustice out there and you got to sort through that. And so I think for a lot of countries, they're going to say, yes, let's do the right thing moving forward. I think there's some that are going to drag their feet. I think China obviously is going to drag their feet because they realize how much money they're skimming off of the United States, on all the activities they do and want to continue that. Canada and a lot of places have done the same, even through USMCA. So I think that's one of those areas that we have to continue to work on, and we'll get as much as we can done and as quickly as possible. I think, you know, just in general, I'm not a big advocate of tariffs because what they really are is it increases price of goods and it distorts the right marketplace. And you want to make sure that you have a good common sense free market for people to make decisions on. The best tariffs one you propose that actually then leads to the negotiation and never gets implemented.
Which I think is his plan all along. I think a lot of this has been a threat. And then they come to the table and you never have to actually.
It really is. And he's not the first president to talk about this injustice on the tariffs. It's just that his predecessors, whether they were Democrat or Republican, knew it was going to be, there's going to be some tumultuous activity in that. And as you go through that change, and they didn't want to address that. But President Trump's been willing to step up.
They weren't willing to take the heat. And that's right. As we've seen before. Yep. I have to ask you about this. I don't know if you saw it today. The minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries, and a few of his colleagues held a sit-in on the Capitol steps. Like eight people showed up, half of whom were probably staffers. You've been in the minority. I mean, it just seems like right now they're wandering around without a plan and just throwing bombs and trying to find AOC running around talking about I don't know what's going on across the aisle.
Yeah. I mean, they really have no vision. And the vision talked about that they've supported is completely opposite of what Americans want.
And so left-wing, far left.
They're trying to support the continuation of waste, fraud, and abuse in the government. They're trying to support illegal immigration coming
into
the country.
Men and playing girl sports.
Yeah. So many of those things that they're out promoting, and now they're saying, oh, wait a minute, the voters don't want that. You know, what do we do? And they can't figure out what they want to do. So they're actually just flailing around that because they don't have anything positive to talk about for America. So they try to do some sound bites. You know, we talked earlier about Van Hollen and, and some other members of Congress that went down to rail on, you know, illegal immigrant and help support that. We look at other things that are out there, you know, whether you talk about just the things that have bloated in the government and how much trying to rein in some of that spending and where things have gone. And as DOGE and other things are being uncovered, we're seeing that a lot of that money's flowing into Democrat supporters and Democrat donors.
Oh, yeah.
Out of the federal treasury.
We had a guest on last hour who talked about the Stacey Abrams money and some of the EPA money that Biden, you know, billions of dollars that was going to some of these organizations.
Being funneled to these organizations. Right. And in a lot of cases, once it leaves the government hands, if there's not strict provisions for oversight, it's disappeared. I mean, there is no control over it after that, after it gets out. And so, you know, the Democrats, they don't have a message. They don't have something that the American people want. And, you know, American people, they want a strong America. They want to have good economic growth. They want to have jobs for Americans and want to make sure that we have good, strong defense for our country.
And then they want the government to leave them alone. I mean, which is hard for people who love the nanny state, is what the opposite side
right.
of the aisle.
That's right. I mean, our whole system was based on having limited government so that people could have more freedom, more choices, and opportunity to do what they want to do. And that's just, it's gotten so bloated over time.
Congressman, I appreciate you as always coming and joining us. If folks want to reach out, if they want to, I know I get your Ron's Reads. If they want to get your newsletter or stay in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, the best way to do that is estes.house.gov. That's our website. I mean, you can sign up for a newsletter there and keep up with some of the things that are going on.
Well, I have credit where credit's due. I have stolen more than one carry-on commentary from your Ron's reads. So thank you again, and always a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, it's great, and you know, our staff pulls together a lot of good things that they see and helps out with making that happen.
Well, my best.
Thank you for being here
to Debbie and to Roman and to your lovely wife, your better half.
Well, thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear from you. Studio lines are open. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, coming up next month, third Sunday in May, we'll be broadcasting from the AFP headquarters downtown at Union Station, thanks to our friends at Eck Insurance. And if you're looking for a way to get involved, the folks at AFP are fantastic. Great opportunity to get involved, to make your voice heard. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And also our show's expanding. Starting Saturday, we'll be rebroadcasting the John Whitmer Show 1 to 3 on Saturdays right here on KNSS. What a great, he is just, I love Ron. He's a rock star, no nonsense. And just, you can trust him. That's one of the things I love about him, is he shoots straight from the hip and you can trust him.
I love my spot here from up in the gallery. So I can watch the two of you banter back and forth, and there's no hesitation with any of his answers.
He's a politician, but he doesn't give you politician answers.
He knows what he's talking about, and he's very straightforward, very honest. Honest and politician, does that go together?
It does on the right, on the good ones.
He personifies that, though. He projects that, and it's nice. It's refreshing.
I've never gotten the BS politician answers out of him. There are a few of them that don't do that. You know, there are a lot of them that do that at the state, local, and federal level. And I've interviewed a lot of politicians. And all too often you get that calculated answer where I have to figure out what am I supposed to say, or they glance over at their staffer and, you know, or their notes. Okay, what am I supposed to say if I'm asked X, Y, and Z? Or did they send, you know, a lot of them ask for pre-screened questions, which I won't do. I won't give you the questions in advance because, but, you know, he didn't ask for that. They don't want that. They don't plug you with questions of here's what I want to be asked about. He just, you know, shows up and goes.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know he'd been to the prison until I asked him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, which is cool. I mean, I think it's just interesting. But I think you're right. And you can tell there's a level of authenticity there that I appreciate, that I think too many politicians, particularly in D.C., don't have. So it's nice that we have that in Ron Estes, and I appreciate him, and I think that's why people connect with him. But then again, I'm biased because I've known Ron since he was our state treasurer, and so I've gotten to know him for years. I've known him and his wife Susan for decades, and so we've been friends, and I've been in their home, and so there's just been, you know, I've had that rapport with them for a long time, but it is nice to have that relationship. So we'll take a quick break and pay a few bills, and then Wichita City Councilman J.V. Johnston will try to explain why some of his colleagues are considering, wait for it, raising taxes, specifically property taxes, to address projected budget deficits in 26 and 27. 316-869-1330 is the studio line. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Make sure you stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And find and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Those are the best ways to get all the latest updates on the show, like, for example, the fact that we're now rebroadcasting on Saturdays. Facing a deficit of several million dollars in the coming years, some City of Wichita elected officials are talking about the possibility of increasing or adding taxes. Options could include a 1% city sales tax or a mill levy property tax rate increase. With us now is J.V. Johnston, Wichita City Council member. J.V., thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Thank you, John.
So, and I want to get to this issue, but before we do, I know, just because I know we're friends and I know your background, let me put that, like, put a pin in that and talk to you a little bit about, because I know how devout you are and know that your background, the Pope Francis, we just had the funeral. It's been for Catholics, you know, my good friend Blake Carpenter is a Catholic, and I've got friends who are Catholics. I'm just curious for your thoughts on the passing of Pope Francis.
Well, he was just remarkable, in my mind, a remarkable Pope, remarkable priest, and just a great person. He's dearly going to be missed. He did question some things, and he was just very humble, and he was really just inclusive of everyone.
The humility, so, you could see for sure, and even in the just in the ceremony of his funeral was very simple, elegant, but still simple. You know, the coffin was simple, the proceedings were simple, even his where he's being buried is simple, and just his name is the only thing on the tombstone. Just a very simple, godly man, and I actually appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too, John. He was, you know, just a wooden coffin, nothing fancy,
right?
Not getting buried in where most popes get buried, in the conclaves, but he just very, very humble. And you're right, even his headstone, just Papa Francis,
right?
That's it.
Yep, just his name. It's yeah. You've got I think they announced or they're going to, but the conclave begins a few days, a week or so. Have you given, if you had to guess, where do you think they'll lean on who the next pope is? I'm not a Catholic, so I don't follow it, but I know there's been a lot of people who are looking at some of the African cardinals as front runners. Cardinal Serra was one that I think, you know, a lot of people are, at least on social media, think would be a phenomenal new pope. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, it's a wild card because nobody knows. You know, there's some front runners. You know, one of the cardinals from Italy has met all of the cardinals, and so some people are saying that he might be a front runner. And then, like you say, maybe some from Africa or you know, another continent might be a front runner. So you just don't know. It's a very private and private process, and we'll just see how it shakes out. Wait for the white smoke.
Yeah, and the one thing I would tell people is don't go watch the movie Conclave and think that's the way it happens, because trust me, that movie isn't. Well, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there's a gotcha thing, a moment in that movie that will ruin it for a lot of people. So,
is that right?
Yeah.
My wife and I plan on watching it maybe tomorrow night, so we have not watched it yet.
It's, from what I understand, there's a lot of historical accuracies in the process, and it's very interesting. But I've seen some interviews with some papal experts that talk about the conclaves themselves are nowhere near as political as the movie makes out. And there is a how do I want to phrase this without ruining it? There's a woke LGBTQ moment in the movie that will ruin it for many people. So I'll just put it that way.
Is that right? I'll have to see.
Yeah. Let me know what you think. Okay. All right. Let's get to the topic at hand. One of your colleagues, Brandon Johnson, who frankly has never found a tax increase he didn't like, put forward. Yeah. And you and I both know that the city of Wichita is facing a several million dollar deficit. It's nothing new. I've had you and Dalton and Mayor Wu on. We've discussed this many times. But right now, to be considering a property, even a sales tax increase, but certainly a property tax increase, is asinine. And yet here's Brandon Johnson on Channel 3 this week talking about raising property taxes. I can't imagine. Well, I know there are probably three no votes. Please tell me there's at least four for that.
Well, you got to hope so. You know, I'm definitely a no vote. There's no way I'd raise property taxes. And we need to find ways that we can lower property taxes. So it's just a non-starter for me to raise property taxes.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're aware. I know that you know that Councilman Glasscock formed a budget advisory committee. I serve on the budget advisory committee, and we've been doing a deep dive for months now into the city of Wichita's budget. And we've found millions in potential savings. And I mean, there's obvious things like the 2% that goes to art or the, you know, I mean, look, before we start raising taxes, there's got to be ways that we could look to cut spending without raising taxes on folks that are taxed enough already. And I'm just surprised. Maybe it's because Brandon's not, you know, he's term limited and he's not running again, that he would be so willing to even put this forward like that.
Well, you got to remember what district he's from, too.
Yeah.
One that benefits probably from more of the taxes than any other district. You know, most of the taxes are paid, or at least almost 50% are paid by District 2 and District 5. So that's, you know, northwest Wichita and, you know, east Wichita. So we definitely support most of the goings on at the city. What I hear from people is, especially retired people who are on a fixed income, they say, listen, my property taxes are going up 8, 10, 13, 18%, and my income's only going up 3 or 4%.
Right.
Through Social Security or investments or whatever. And the numbers just don't work that way.
No, you're absolutely right.
I mean, yeah.
My most recent assessment went up 6%, but last year it went up 18%. So I'm in that boat. I know exactly what you're talking about on property taxes. And
yeah, mine went up 13% this year and more than that last year. So.
Right. So and yet I guarantee you, you're like me and have done nothing more than mow the lawn over that 2 year period of time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you think about the idea? You know, I know that County Commissioner Ryan Beatty has looked at the idea of maybe doing a sales tax. Doesn't necessarily have to be 1%. It could be, you know, 7% or 0.7% or 0.5% or whatever. And then using some of that revenue to lower property taxes. And then the other portion of it to offset some of this, you know, this revenue that you need. What do you think of something like that?
You know, Commissioner Beatty's been talking about that for the last year and a half.
Yep.
And to be honest with you, I would like to have a discussion about that. I think if we can, we have to determine how is our local government going to be funded. Is it going to be mainly property tax? Is it with a little bit of sales tax? Or can we put a little bit more of the burden on sales tax and take some relief off property owners? So I think that's a discussion we need to have. And I would certainly favor having that discussion, and I probably would favor that also. They say that 20-25% of the sales tax comes from outside the city of Wichita. So, you know, let's have these bedroom communities around us who use our streets, our library, our services, even our fire goes out and helps with their fire departments and things. You know, let's have them pay a little bit more for the services they are using in the city of Wichita.
Well, so, and the nice thing about a sales tax is that would go to the people. So if they don't like it, they could vote no, but at least it would be a vote that would have to go to the people and would allow it would allow for that democratic process, as opposed to, you know, raising the revenue R&R or property tax increase, which would just be the seven of you.
It's true. That's true. Sales tax would have to go out for a vote, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I like the idea. I mean, it's worth at least considering. I'm not a big tax guy anyway, but I certainly like that. I would rather see something like that where at least the people get a chance to vote on it, and then if they don't like it, then they'll vote it down. But at least it's something to consider. JV, yeah. I appreciate you as always, especially stepping in. It's nice to you and I don't have a chance to talk as often as I'd like, but I appreciate you joining us. If folks want to reach out to you, if they have questions, if they want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
You know, they can obviously email me at City Hall, JVJohnston@wichita.gov, And I give people my cell number, 640-6442. Just text me or call me. I'd be glad to talk to them and have that discussion. One thing I might say, John, is a 1% sales tax for the city of Wichita is $108 million a year. One mill levy is equal to about $5 million a year. So to your point, we don't have to do 1%. It could be 0.5%.
Exactly.
And have half of that and be $54 million, and we could lower the mill levy by, you know, 10, 11 mills.
There you go. So, and still have extra revenue to help offset your losses that you shortfall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
it's a great idea.
People think about it, and I'm certainly in for it, looking for ways that we can cut property taxes.
And I don't think a 0.5-cent sales tax would break anybody's budget necessarily, but you know, raising a property tax on folks who are already getting taxed out of their homes. I mean, we just talked about the Goddard School District, and you know, that $350 a year on people living out in Goddard schools, that's going to kill some people. So brother, I appreciate you, and I appreciate your willingness to, you know, be open-minded about this stuff.
Well, I appreciate it, John, and thanks for your show and all your listeners. If they don't reach out to me, I'd be more than happy to talk to them.
Thank you, JV. Have a good rest of your weekend. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear from you. What do you think? Should the city of Wichita look at maybe a 0.5-cent sales tax in order to cover their budget shortfall? I think they should just cut spending and leave it at that. But, hey, you know, you got to get four votes. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show. Speaking of Saturdays, starting Saturday, the John Whitmer Show will be rebroadcast on Saturdays from 1 to 3. This song will be appropriate. And don't forget about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. Great folks. If you're looking for a way to change the trajectory of our city or the county or the state, make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. And, of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. John, you're on the John Whitmer Show. You know, John, doctor, thank you for sticking around.
Yeah, John, thanks. Great show.
Thank you.
You've already touched on this. Yeah, you bet. Not necessarily how I'm looking at this, but you pretty much have said it. So when Vice President Harris was running for office, she had proposed that she's going to tax artwork and all these various categories of things that have gone up in value. So basically an unrealized tax on things that we have not sold as the citizenry. So I kind of look at our county government and somewhat city, you know, the tax entities that benefit from property valuations going up, they're essentially doing the same thing that we all just went ballistic about when Vice President Harris proposed that. I mean, essentially, they're saying, hey, your property value has gone up. You didn't sell it, and we don't care whether you sold it or not, but we're going to tax it at the new rate. And I don't know how we get out of it, because if they don't raise the valuation, and you know this, if our property values go down, they're going to raise the mill levy. So they're going to get what they want. But I like the context of our valuations go up. We're being taxed on an unrealized gain that we don't sell our property. What are your thoughts about this?
I'm a fan. The legislature looked at it this year. I wish they'd done it. The Senate passed it. I'm a fan of putting a cap. Capping. The problem is the appraisal process. So I think that you should put a cap on appraisals. I think that's really the problem here. JV mentioned it. Our home, for example, this year, shockingly, they only raised it 6%. But last year it was 18%. The year before that, I believe it was 19%. And again, we've done nothing but mow the lawn and need to repaint the fence. There's no reason for our home to have gone. In the last 10 years, our home has increased by $100,000 in value. We built it a little over 10 years ago, and it's literally worth over $350,000 now. And we We've done nothing. We have done nothing but mow the lawn.
Yeah, well you know that, like, there are states around the country, and I know it's been brought up in our legislature. You probably were part of it, that especially for retirees, you know, once you hit 65 yep. or the age you retire, like you're saying, you cap it, and that's it. And this is all a function of our state legislature. I live in Reno County, and they're forever talking about the valuations are completely based on what the state tells us they have to be within 5% one appraisal every 3 years or 5 years, whatever it is.
Correct, which is accurate, but what they don't do is put a cap. And I think they should be something, you know, 4%, 5%, whatever, that you can't exceed that. So the maximum that your house property taxes could go up every year is 5% or something like that. And that way you're putting some kind of a limit on, so that you're not having this happen. And if that requires then the cities and the counties to start being, oh my God, fiscally responsible and learn to live within their means, well, then do so. If they need more revenue, then they can go back to the taxpayers and ask for a sales tax or ask to raise property taxes. But this valuations are where the problem is here.
Yeah, well, I'll let you go here, but I just encourage everybody. Obviously, the session is over for this year. They're already starting on next year pretty quick.
Yes, they are.
So a lot of us need to get behind this and say, put that cap on. And, John, appreciate your show. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, John. Yeah, that is, I mean, it came up this year. The Senate passed it. The House had their version. I know that they are working on the issue. The problem is, The states, I mean, the state, as you know, we've talked about it on this show, the state is now really out of the business of collecting property taxes now. They can do something about capping valuations, but the state no longer collects property taxes. So now if you really want to address property taxes, it's three entities, cities, counties, and schools. And frankly, the schools are the number one culprit. So you've got to, well, look at what Goddard's doing. I mean, it's a massive tax increase on Goddard residents. And $350 a year is a massive tax increase. Also, they can build a bunch of athletic fields and press boxes. And this is the stuff that we've got to start addressing, cities, counties, and schools and property taxes. That's the only way you're going to stop it, is if you start electing people at these local levels who are fiscally responsible. We'll be with you next Sunday. And, of course, you can listen again on Saturdays. In the meantime, carry on.